Hello. We're going to talk today about Unitarian Universalism. What the heck is Unitarian Universalism anyway? It's important for us to talk about this every once in a while because there are always new folks among us, and those of us who have been here a while need to be reminded what the heck we're doing here anyway. So I want to start with a brief history because it's important to remember where we came from and the ways that that informed who we are today. So I'm going to start with this slide here. Adam is going to put that up. And Unitarianism and Universalism were each separate denominations. They were both separate Christian denominations as far back hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but most recently and most importantly to our history, beginning in the 1800s. Unitarianism believed that God was one, not three parts like the Trinity. So the Council of Nicaea, if you go all the way back to 325 CE, there was the Council of Nicaea. And if any of you ever said the Nicene Creed growing up, then you are were reciting something that was created at that council. There was a big disagreement at that council, and the winning perspective was the Trinitarian perspective, the idea that God is three parts and that Jesus is God. The dissenting opinion that did not win was, we would say with a small u, Unitarian, the idea that God is one and not three. And this means that Jesus, who in the Christian Unitarian perspective might have been very God-like, was not God, was separate. So if we fast forward to the 1800s and we start seeing people using this term Unitarian with a big U, claiming the word, the name Unitarian, they were talking about this idea that God is one, that Jesus is not God, but they really believed that Jesus was a moral teacher, a moral model, a moral guide. So the worship of Jesus was to follow Jesus's example, and that salvation occurred not through Jesus's crucifixion and resurrection, but that salvation occurred by following Jesus's example, and that salvation occurred in this life through our character and through our actions. Now, if we go over to the Universalists, they didn't have any problem with the Trinity, but they believed that God's most important characteristic was that God was loving. God is love. And if that was true, then there was no hell. There was no damnation. There was some time in the early evolution of Universalist thought where they believed that hell happened after life for just a short period of time. But for the sake of today's sermon, that's too complicated. And we're just going to say there was no hell and everyone universally was saved, universal salvation, everyone, regardless of what they believed. And so, just like the Unitarians began to really focus on this life and our actions in this life as the way that we save each other and save ourselves, the Universalists also did not believe in damnation after life. And so, they didn't feel the need to try to save people's souls. Instead, they focused on this life and focusing on justice and getting rid of the hell that is real and here on earth today. So both of our ancestors, Unitarians and Universalists, they came together in 1961 and they formed what we now call the Unitarian Universalist Association, or the UUA. And they decided they were no longer explicitly Christian, that instead we would be guided by principles, we would be inspired by multiple sources, and we're going to talk about those again in a little while. But it's important to remember where we come from. I like to think of it like a backpack. Like along the journey, we picked up these things, this emphasis on love, this emphasis on justice, reason, salvation by character. And we put those things in our backpack, and maybe we set some things down. Maybe we set down the fact that we were explicitly Christian and are no longer have that in our backpack. But that history really informs who we are today. So today, we're going to do a little dancing. I love to dance. And I was a bit of a dancer in my younger years. And one of the things that they do when they're getting ready to count you in, you know, here we go, we're getting ready to start, is they count five, six, seven, eight, and then you go. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to do the 5, 6, 7, 8 of Unitarian Universalism. So number 5, Adam, will you put up our slide for us here? 5 stands for the 5 smooth stones of religious liberalism. And religious liberalism is the wing of theology that we are a part of. We are a part of the religious liberal tradition. And it's important to remember that we have a tradition, we are part of a larger theological tradition of religious liberalism. And when I use that word liberalism, I'm not talking about political liberalism, although sometimes it goes together with religious liberalism. We're using that word in the sense that it means that we are always open and willing to change. That unlike conservatism, which seeks to conserve or keep the tradition the same, liberalism is much more willing to sort of change over time. And so that is who we are as a people. And James Luther Adams was a theologian, a Unitarian theologian, writing in the early 1900s. And he wrote down these 5 smooth stones of religious liberalism. And the reason he called them the 5 smooth stones is because he was calling back to the Hebrew Bible story of David and Goliath. Goliath was the big Philistine soldier with weapons and armor. And David was the young Hebrew shepherd who was going to fight Goliath. And all he had was his slingshot and his 5 smooth stones. And so that's what James Luther Adams is saying. He was living in a time of World War II and Nazism. And he said, you know, do we have anything to fight against this as religious liberals? I mean, what do we even have to stand up to this, the dark and scary things in this world? And he said, yes, we do. We have these 5 things. And so I'm not going to read them word for word. They're complicated, but actually, you know what? I will. I'll read them. So the first one is religious liberalism depends on the principle that revelation is continuous. This means that our tradition is always learning new things, that we are always open to learning new truths and to changing. So openness is number 1. Number 2, all relations between persons ought ideally to rest on mutual free consent and not coercion. That means that we choose to enter into this relationship with each other, to covenant with each other, to be a part of this religious community without anyone's telling us that we have to or that we don't have a choice about it. So number 2 is free consent. Number 3, religious liberalism affirms the moral obligation to direct one's effort toward the establishment of a just and loving community. He continues, it's this which makes the role of the prophet central and indispensable in liberalism. So I would summarize that by saying justice, that our moral obligation is to direct our efforts to creating a just and loving community. And he references the prophet. James Luther Adams wrote a book called The Prophethood of All Believers, which was a play on Martin Luther's words, the priesthood of all believers. And he was saying that it is in our liberal tradition that everyone can be a prophet. Everyone can speak truth to power. Everyone can speak love to the hard things in the world. So that comes back to us in our sources, which we will talk about again in a little while. Number 4, we deny the immaculate conception of virtue and affirm the necessity of social incarnation, which just means good things don't just happen. People make them happen. And so some traditions, some religious traditions, really believe that all of the agency lies with God or with the deity. And in religious liberalism, we believe that the agency lies with us, that God or the great mystery has given us that agency. So number 5 is liberalism holds that the resources, divine and human, are available for the achievement of meaningful change, which justifies an attitude of ultimate optimism. This just means that we have what we need, even though it seems like things are so hard, like things are never going to get better. Religious liberalism always has a stance of hope, of ultimate optimism. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but ultimately there is reason for hope. So there are our five smooth stones: openness, free consent, justice, agency, and hope. So here we go, 5, 6, 7, 8. Our next one is 6. And this is our 6 sources of Unitarian Universalist inspiration. Now, these are the roots of our tradition. So Adam, if you put that slide up for us, you can see the Unitarian Universalist symbol in the trunk of the tree. And if you were to scroll up and see the top of the image, which you can't because I cut it off, you would actually see the principles as the branches of that tree, but the sources are the roots. And we don't talk a ton about our sources, but we're trying to change that with our source horses, which Miss Kim talked about, and we will be talking about in our RE program a lot this year. So these are the roots of our tradition, and it's important to know that they are not a menu from which we can choose. You do not come into this place where we say, here, welcome to the fellowship, here, pick which one of these 6 things speaks most to you. Now, of course, some of them are going to speak more to you than others. They're not all going to speak to you as clearly as each, but we don't want you to shut off yourself to any of these sources. We want you to allow yourself to be open enough to be inspired by any of them, recognizing that some of them are going to speak more clearly than others. So they are direct experience of wonder. And again, they're very long, so I'm not going to read them. You can find them online if you Google the 6 sources of UU inspiration. Direct experience of wonder. And this goes back to the sermon that Reverend Karen gave last week about awe, experiences of awe. 2, words and deeds of prophetic people, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and transforming love. And so there's that word prophetic, prophet, that James Luther Adams was talking about, that any one of us can be a prophet and speak truth to power. So when I think about this source, I'm inspired by people like Gandhi, or Harvey Milk was a prophet, or people in our own community who are working to make our community a better place. Our 3rd source, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life. We always say if a lot of people follow it, there's got to be something to it, so we can be inspired by and informed by the world's religions. Our 4th source is Jewish and Christian teachings, particularly the teachings that call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbor as ourself. And some people wonder, why is Jewish and Christian separate from world religions? It's currently in the list. It's currently separate because Jewish and Christian teachings speaks most clearly to that branch which Unitarianism and Universalism emerged out of. So that is particularly related to our own history, although it is, of course, a part of the world religions. 5 is humanist teachings, reason, and science, which is particularly important right now as we are living through a global pandemic, that we remember that we follow the teachings of science, and that we do that not just for facts and information, but for spiritual inspiration, that we believe science is inspiring. And finally, our 6th source is spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions. And this means lots of different traditions. Many of the Native American traditions are earth-centered. Paganism, neo-paganism, Wiccan, these are different traditions that have in common that they honor and celebrate the sacred circle of life and the seasons, and that we too can be inspired by that path and be in harmony with the rhythms of nature. So I think it's important to figure out for yourself which of these is most inspiring for you, but also to think to yourself, which ones of these challenge me? Which ones of these ask me to be more open to these various sources? Because as a Unitarian Universalist, we ask that you allow the inspiration in from all of these 6 sources. So that's number six. Next in our dance count in is 7, 5, 6, 7, 8. So 7 is our 7 Unitarian Universalist principles, which if you know anything about Unitarian Universalism at all, you've probably heard of our 7 principles, which of course, Catherine in her reflection talked about, you know, when I don't know how to explain Unitarian Universalism, I just point to our principles, which is really common among all of us. But it's important to know that this is not just a list of things we believe. In fact, it's not a list of beliefs at all. It's actually a statement from our UUA bylaws, which, you know, sorry to be the bearer of disappointing news. It's not very sacred sounding if it comes from our bylaws. But the preamble to the 7 principles, which is also listed in our hymnal, is we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote these 7 principles. So two important things there. One, it's the congregations doing this agreement, not the individuals. These are not individual statements of belief. We do not have a creed. We are a non-creedal tradition. You do not have to stand and recite these 7 principles and say you believe in them. It is our congregation's responsibility to affirm and promote these. The second thing that's important in that preamble is covenant. This is a covenant. It's an agreement, and covenant is just a fancy spiritual word for an agreement which is between all of us, but also between that which is higher or more all-encompassing than all of us. So some people call that God or our highest ideals. So that's what a covenant is between. It's between us and our highest ideals. And these 7 principles are that covenant between our congregations. The other thing that's interesting about the 7 principles is that they can change. They actually should change. But we have not changed them in many, many years. I think 30 years or something, at least, the 7 principles have not been changed. And in fact, if you walk into our building here at the fellowship, you go through the front doors and you look up, the 7 principles are painted on the wall when you first walk in. And so it's very hard when congregations paint it on the wall, or we make posters, or we make shirts that have our 7 principles. It's hard for us to change them. They start to be sort of, we become very attached to them, but they were not handed down at Mount Sinai. They're not etched in stone. They were not given to us by Moses. They were voted on at a meeting. And they can change, and they should change. And in fact, in the next year or two, there's going to be another cycle of examining our principles, and it's likely that they might actually change this time. So our 7 principles, the first and the 7th are the two that everyone remembers. The first one is about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The 7th is the respect for the interdependent web of which we are all a part. Then we get number 2, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. 3, acceptance of one another. And then I love this, encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. So again, this is back to that congregational life piece. The 4th principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I think that is the central principle. It's literally the middle of the 7. And we're not going to tell you what to believe. We're going to encourage you and challenge you on your own and in our congregations on our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The 5th principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. So we operate as a congregation democratically. Number 6, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. There's that word justice again. That's the second time we've heard that in the principles. So those are our 7 principles, and they are very important, very foundational for us, but they are not unchanging. And I think they call back to us both to the smooth stones, that prophetic piece, the inspiration, the sources of inspiration, and they also call back to our heritage, our Unitarian and Universalist heritage, love, justice, truth, conscience. So that's why it's important for us to remember that history from where we came from. Finally, 5, 6, 7, 8, Number eight is a possible eighth principle. So I'll have Adam put it up on the screen. Our principles, as I just mentioned, are up for revision soon, and many leaders in our Unitarian Universalist movement, particularly leaders of color, have asked that we commit ourselves to an eighth principle. Many congregations have already adopted it for use on their own. It says, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote, so that's that preamble, journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and in our institutions. So that is the eighth principle, which is up for discussion for this coming year, and we can be a part of that discussion as we are a member congregation of the UUA that is a part of this covenant. And I think it's really important that we heed the guidance of these leaders of color who have asked that we adopt this eighth principle. And I also ask that we try to avoid the pitfall of wordsmithing. That will be the responsibility of the committee at the UUA who is involved in this principle revision. But I know it's very easy to sort of get hung up on the words, and I want us to just open our hearts to the spirit of this principle and recognize that the leaders of color who wrote it the way they did for a reason, and it's not necessarily my or our job, particularly those of us who are white, to be wordsmithing those words. So that is it. 5, 6, 7, 8. 5 smooth stones of religious liberalism, 6 sources of inspiration, 7 principles, and hopefully an 8th principle. And this just reminds me that we are a liberal religious faith. That's what the 5 smooth stones tell us. We are a religious tradition. We are inspired by multiple sources of theological inspiration, and we're guided by our principles, which call us to transform ourselves, to transform the world. We are a religion. We're not a social club. We're not a political party. We can't take that religious part of ourselves and set it aside. But neither can we take the part that says we are called to transform the world. We are called to make the world better. We are called to live our lives accountably to the world. We can't take that and set it aside either and say, oh, I don't want any of that. I just want the spiritual religious stuff. So we have to have them both. It's very, very important. If we take one or the other away, we're not actively living as Unitarian Universalists. So in the midst of all of this, we are communities. We strive to support each other, to challenge each other, to love each other. And we do all of that in the context of everything I've already shared. So thank you.